Good evening and welcome to Left, Right and Center. I'm Vishnu Shom. On the program this evening, in a resounding victory for global unity and Indian policy, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization has adopted the Tianjin Declaration, unequivocally condemning terrorism in all its forms. This powerful statement explicitly denounces the horrific Pahalgam terror attack of the 22nd of April, where 26 innocent lives, mostly tourists, were brutally cut short in Kashmir's serene meadows, shattering families and igniting national outrage. The declaration also slams cross-border terror networks, vowing to dismantle them and ensure that perpetrators face justice, reaffirming the SCO's commitment to peace and stability. Amid this, India has seen landmark meetings with the Chinese President Xi Jinping and the Russian President Vladimir Putin. With China, India has pledged to advance ties based on mutual trust, resuming direct flights, boosting trade and easing border tensions. Partners, not rivals, for 2.8 billion people. With Russia, discussions fortified energy security, defense collaboration and economic goals, underscoring our unbreakable bond even in turbulent times. Yet, despite these triumphs, the United States, led by Trump's hawkish advisor, Peter Navarro, continues its reckless rants. In a shocking, divisive tirade, Fox News, that's where he was being interviewed, Navarro accused Brahmins of profiteering off the Indian people through Russian oil deals, branding India a laundromat for the Kremlin to justify crippling 50% tariffs. This cast is slur, ignoring India's sovereign energy choices that stabilize global markets, reeks of hypocrisy from a nation still buying Russian uranium. That's exactly what the United States is doing. But there were important remarks made by the Prime Minister today at the end of what's been a fairly successful SCO. Let's listen in.
हर देश हर व्यक्ति को खुली चुनौती थी। ऐसे में प्रश्न उतना स्वाभाविक है, क्या कुछ देशों द्वारा आतंकवाद का खुलेआम समर्थन हमें स्वीकार्य हो सकता है? एक्सेलेंसी, हमें स्पष्ट रूप से और एक स्वर में कहना होगा कि आतंकवाद पर कोई भी डबल स्टैंडर्ड स्वीकार्य नहीं होंगे। हमें मिलकर आतंकवाद का हर रंग में हर रूप में विरोध करना होगा। ये मानवता के प्रति हमारा दायित्व है।
Well, joining us now, David Goldwyn, Brian Wong, Ajay Malhotra, and Velina Chakarova. I'd like to thank you all very much for being with us. David Goldwyn, let me come to you first. You know, some of the remarks made by Peter Navarro were almost bizarre. Brahmins profiteering from Russian oil, India is the Maharaja of tariffs, Russia got into bed with big oil in India, Indian refiners make a ton of money, etc., etc. Why would it be necessary for Navarro to be making these remarks in the first place?
Well, it's not necessary. He's not the foreign minister, and he has long been a fringe figure, even in trade talks in the United States. But what's going on right now is the administration has a full court press where it has turned loose basically all administration officials to put pressure on India in the hopes of using coercive diplomacy to get a better trade deal. It's a very ahistorical approach. It's very destructive to decades, really, of Republican and Democratic cooperation to try and build trust in a relationship with India. And it's an unfortunate combination of arrogance and ignorance in not really recognizing that the United States, with the G7, sought to have India stabilize markets and others by observing the G7 price cap and reducing Russia's income, and that there's also a context, which is India has long cooperated with U.S. sanctions on Iran and U.S. sanctions on Venezuela. These are the other large sources of heavy crude which India needs for its refineries. So India has been a great partner in security, and it's quite hypocritical for Navarro to slam India for its role while the U.S., as you pointed out, imports uranium Europe still imports some amount of gas before it phases it out. Turkey, and then, of course, the big kahuna, China, you know, is the largest importer and flouts U.S. sanctions on Iran and on Venezuela, too. So this is really a making China great again policy, which I don't really understand. Navarro is not a very sophisticated foreign policy analyst, and his remarks are unfortunate and embarrassing.
Ambassador Malhotra, from New Delhi's standpoint, how does one deal with America? Because it is a deep strategic partnership. It's premised on high-tech transfers, defense, resilience, semiconductor chains, et cetera, et cetera. I could go on. So does India just keep quiet, relatively speaking, and get on with the business of its own foreign policy and not react to Trump and wait out the next couple of years? Is that the pragmatic way forward?
Well, there is a bit of a precedent to the way Democrat and Republican governments handle India. If you see, when they want to irritate us, if you see the Democrats, they raise issues like human rights, environmental concerns, etc., where trade is concerned. And when Republican governments come in, you have tariffs which are resorted to, asking for reduction of tariffs to give advantages to American industry. But in the past, and having served there as Minister of Commerce and handled the USTR's office very closely, I can tell you in the past, this was all sorted out through quiet, below-the-table negotiations, which did not come into the public purview. Unfortunately, now we have the U.S. president, who himself is going on social media and putting out references out there, which are not very helpful. And it causes problems for any negotiators who are trying to find a solution. So, and the last example you gave of Mr. Navarro is really somebody who's spouting nonsense. He clearly has no idea what he's talking about. And I think if we need to move forward, President Trump needs to disassociate himself from this sort of comment, which is entirely unhelpful. So, yes, we would like to go forward. I think the right way is through quiet diplomacy, as has always been the case. And this is the way we would like to see the negotiations with USA progress, not through posturing, not through unhelpful statements made in the public eye, which, if you want, we can also do that. But I think the government has been very sensible and our prime minister has been very correct in refraining from doing so.
David Goldman, let me come back to you. You know, the optics of what we saw today, Xi, Putin and Modi, shaking hands. There was this friendly banter going on. America is concerned. Trump is concerned about a resilient BRICS. I don't know if Russia, India and China are getting into some sort of alliance now presently or not. But would Washington be uncomfortable with the bonhomie that it sees between the three leaders? In the case of China, it's been a big strategic concern of the United States, one on the basis of which Washington's equation with New Delhi has been premised. Now, if you've got all these three leaders, you know, sort of working together and talking together in this way, what would Washington likely be thinking?
Well, I think it won't be unnoticed, the symbolism of first of all, Prime Minister Modi going to China. I think it's been 7 years since he was in China, and shaking hands and having the car ride with Putin. I think the U.S. won't be too concerned that the SEO or the BRICS, for that matter, are going to lead to some new alternative world order. There are huge frictions, of course, within the SEO. India and Pakistan are both in there. That's not going to be a great security platform for anyone. No one's going to trust China to lead the rest of the SEO coalition on AI. But those in the administration who have feared that this kind of coercive diplomacy will push India closer to China will have some ammunition now. I think it will be read really as symbolism. I think those who have been critical of India's relationship with Russia, despite decades of history there, will see reinforcement in these ties. But I think the big upshot of this is that Prime Minister Modi has built some leverage for the trade talks by showing that there are alternatives, even though no one really believes the SEO itself or the BRICS will be that alternative. But I think no one's going to be too concerned about a new world order coming out of these meetings. Yeah.
I do think, however, that it's interesting that about 20 minutes before Putin met Prime Minister Modi, there was this rather expansive tweet from the U.S. Embassy here in New Delhi talking up the India US relationship, talking up the people-to-people bonds, the defense relationship, this, that, and the other, talking about how this is a relationship for the future. I think that timing was not coincidental. I do believe, you know, there were messages over there that, hang on, stay the course, and let's ensure that we get through this. It is interesting that that was done. Be that as it may, Velina Chakarova, what I found interesting, more than President Putin and Prime Minister's official meeting, was the sort of unofficial one. For 45 minutes in President Putin's limo, where the two leaders met one-on-one and spoke. Nobody knows what they spoke about, but that was, you know, distant from the official bilateral meet itself. How significant would that be? And would I be wrong to suggest that perhaps they were talking about Ukraine?
It is significant indeed. Of course, we can only speculate, and certainly the ongoing war in Ukraine has been on the agenda between the two leaders, where Putin probably has briefed Prime Minister Modi on the current state of preparations, if there are any, regarding negotiations, regarding possible venue, and so on and so forth. We do not really know at what stage we are following the Alaska summit. So I suppose Alaska summit, post-Alaska, the conversations with the Americans, because we now have two tracks. We have the strategic dialogue between Russia and United States, the new geopolitical rapprochement, which, by the way, is good news for India as well, because let's be real, we can, of course, debate this low point of the bilateral relationship between United States and India, but this relationship is by no means actually going in the opposite direction. There have been plenty of preparatory actions and plenty of platforms over the last years that have set the stage for this bilateral relationship. So in a sense, geopolitical rapprochement between United States and Russia is real. It has nothing to do with the war itself or with the Europeans. The Europeans have been completely sidelined. I think that at the core of the 45 minutes conversation, there has been a lot about the bilateral relationship between India and Russia. There is plenty of potential right now. When it comes to commodities, it's not just about the oil. In the future, Russia wants also to start exporting gas, liquefied natural gas. Russia and America are in a clear competition about both, as you probably know. Then it's about trade corridors as opposed to the Belt and Road initiative, such as the case with the Chennai-Vladivostok corridor, which has been revived, a corridor from the first Cold War now being revived during the second Cold War between America on the one hand and China and Russia, the Dragon Bear, on the other. And, of course, fertilizers, arms, weapons, S-400 was deployed successfully for the very first time during the escalation with Pakistan. Of course, there are a lot of issues, I think, that are really concerning the bilateral relationship. And in that sense, 45 minutes probably were too short.
True. Brian, well, he's going to be here in December. I would assume they'd have many more talks then as well, and perhaps prior to that. Brian Wong, I think with China, those of us who've observed the relationship in the post-Galwan context and how close to an actual war both sides came, would look at this, at the peace that we are now talking about, with a sense of concern, thinking that it's almost too good to be true. What we lack with China is a profound sense of trust. So in as much as the two leaders are talking, is there really evidence that fundamental trust exists at this juncture?
Well, thank you very much. I'm going to start by affirming the fundamental respect I have for India as a civilizational state, as a state that's rooted in millennia of rich history and an incredible diversity, but also such tenacity and entrepreneurial spirits amongst its people that, frankly, you know, what I've often lamented over the past years is how little the people of China and also the bureaucrats and officials in China understand about India, the nation. And might I posit that the same level of trust and knowledge deficit unfortunately, is also symmetrically replicated in India, no less because, of course, the Chinese political system is not exactly the most transparent system there is on planet Earth. But now that we've seen over the past couple of years radical transformations to the world order, one where America is walking away from the exorbitant privilege, but also the immense perks it's received as a de facto unipole after the end of the Cold War and the end of course, the authoritarian Soviet rule over Russia, but sadly not the end of authoritarianism in Russia per se. But after all of this, and after these changes and vicissitudes, America seems to be retreating from its status as the primary security provider, primary multilateral institution, funder and backer, and of course as an exemplar, as a lighthouse in a shining city upon a hill. All of this is being done away with and dispensed with at record rates from the current incumbent administration in the White House. And so where does that leave us? I think that leaves us essentially with a world where the unipole is weakening, and where there's a rise of regional power centers and powers with their own strategic visions, where their own strategic autonomy is extant and ought to be respected, and yet it's fundamentally unclear as to what kind of world, you know, they want to shape or to bring about in terms of new world order. As David said, I agree with him. I don't think BRICS or the SCO or whatever, you know, conjectures that are concocted by the slew of countries that are seeking to contest in part America's role or presence in certain regions, I don't think they can provide a coherent alternative to a US-led order. And that's exactly why the world we live in today is so fascinating, because it's a multiplex, multi-aligned, but certainly not yet multipolar world. And within this context, then, I think Beijing and the Chinese Communist Party, or the Communist Party of China, rather, as a highly pragmatic, ends-driven and also power-oriented party, is very much keen on stabilizing its relations with its neighborhood, with the periphery, and also with partners such as, of course, a very important India, in carving out an alternative, not world order, but a discourse that is different from the mainstream.
Ambassador Malhotra, what about Pakistan? You would have seen the Pakistani Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif over there. There's been explicit mention of Pahalgam. For India, this is important, because many believe that we've not received the support that we should have from various nations in explicitly naming Pahalgam, and therefore the role of Pakistan in that terror attack in which 26 people were killed. The fact that this was done, despite this being in China, China's often blocked efforts by India to have greater international recognition of the terror threats that we face. And the fact that Pakistan and China are very close, and that all of this took place in China, where China itself could have worked towards not having an agreement along those lines, how significant is that?
Well, first of all, I would say it is a point of satisfaction for Indian diplomacy and an important achievement, if you ask me, because the SCO functions on the basis of consensus, and you could very well have had Pakistan continuing to protest that they can't have a reference to Pahalgam, and the Chinese supporting them. But that did not happen.
They did have a reference to Balochistan, Ambassador. So in a sense, was it balanced?
I think that is a good reference. Because we need to project the concerns that are there. If we are to systematically and satisfactorily discuss them, we need to understand what all is going on in the region, and only then can an organization like the SCO, which hopes to address concerns on terrorism in all its forms and manifestations, only then can it do anything useful. Otherwise, it'll just be a talking shop. So it is good that it referred to the Pahalgam operation, and in Balochistan, I would have looked at it preferably if it weren't in a terrorist context, because Balochistan does have its own situation. As you know, it has been, it was independent before India and Pakistan, at least on the record that is the situation. And therefore it has a claim to where it wants to be. But I think that goes beyond the scope of what we can discuss on the basis of one inclusion. But yes, I think it's an indicator of a desire to maybe move forward in trying to improve our relations with China, which I think India is exploring ways to, rebalance it strategically, our ties with various countries. And we do hope that we would be able to progress the ties to China a bit more. But here, one point I would like to emphasize. This was a multilateral meeting. And even the meeting with China on the margins of the conference was really a protocol meeting to a large extent. I mean, you might have ticked off some boxes, but since the Chinese leader also had to meet before the conference starts, a huge number of other leaders who were present there. So I would have not seen any significant forward movement coming as a result of this. I don't think it should be overinterpreted as that. There are still huge concerns that remain, which India and China need to address. I think going forward, we will take this process forward. That too has been referred to in the documents that were released by the government of India and the Chinese authorities as to the outcome of the meeting.
Yeah. Velina, last question to you. I found it interesting that in his address to the SCO leaders, President Putin referred to China and India as being nations which had reached out and were desirous of peace in Ukraine. You know, whenever one talks about the end of the war between Russia and Ukraine, one often refers to the efforts of Trump and, you know, and every day there's a soundbite from Donald Trump on that. But the fact that there are other countries seeking peace in that region is interesting. And it was, you know, important in a sense that he did mention India and China specifically, because in the context of what's happening there, these two nations aren't quite mentioned in quite the same way as the United States or its partners.
Well, of course, because China and India are the two key allies of Russia. In fact, Russia would have never launched a full-scale war on Ukraine in 2022 if it had not relied on the long-term comprehensive support coming from China. That's actually the dragon bear I meant, this strategic coordination in all systemically relevant domains. Is currently at its peak after 10 years of very close preparation between Xi Jinping and Putin. In fact, they will have, after the CCO summit, they will have the 47th summit together, if I have counted correctly. Mm-hmm. Now, India is equally important strategic partner. The relationship has never been at that level of depth and seriousness, and it's really going to continue evolving. So Putin has to create the intention, even though that I argue this war, unfortunately, will continue beyond 2030, 2032, but he has to create the optics and intentions in front of his two most important allies that he wants to put an end to this war. So
well,
that's
Velina,
actually what's happening.
I'm running short on time. We'll leave it there. But I am distressed to hear that you believe that this war might go on till 2032. We are all hoping that it ends in weeks, if not just a few months. But, you know, I mean, it is a matter
ceasefire,
of
ceasefire, yes. Ceasefire, yes. But, of course, the long-term goal of Russia in this war hasn't been solved.
Achieved.
So that is why, let's be real, short-term ceasefire, I'm absolutely with you on the matter. And I think that this is in line with the Chinese and with the Indian interests, with the interests of the BRICS and the Global South, because all of these countries have been also to some extent affected by the ongoing war.
No, absolutely. There's no doubt about that. Food security, the prices of grain around the world, that's something that's... And let's not forget about the tens of thousands of people on both sides who've lost their lives. Look, I'd like to thank you all very much for joining us. Very, very interesting summit in China. The international order is changing so much. I use the churn virtually every day on my programs, but that really does reflect where things stand. Where does this leave New Delhi and Washington? And what about China, India and Russia having a greater role in foreign policy and in a non-aligned, autonomous structure, which they all talk about? We leave it there. Thanks very much for being with us. Good night.